Good morning, and welcome to your WILF wake-up call. My name is Tana Hartman, and I'm your host this morning. Our engineer is Dick Paddock, and our guest is going to be Bebe Smith. She is the Director of Outpatient Services for the UNC STEP Clinic. STEP stands for Schizophrenia Treatment and Evaluation Program. But before we start with Bebe, I want to just remind you that we are coming to you from WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is your local all-volunteer radio station. And we are Triangle WILF, that's WILPF, for the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. You can learn more about if you visit our website at triangle WILPF.org. We are brought to you by, our underwriter is Internationalist Bookstore, 405 West Franklin Street. That's Internationalist, great little bookstore. Next week on the Wake Up Call, we're going to be talking about the President's Healthcare Reform Conference, which is going on right now in D.C. There are a lot of issues. Apparently, it's only by the grace of God and a hair on his scalp that John Conyers is being included. And he seems to be the only supporter left for single-payer health care. There are a lot of serious concerns around the issue, and we'll have folks in here talking about that next week. Last night, I was at an event here in town over at Extraordinary Ventures. This is another great little business, nonprofit in town that works with young people with developmental delays and our disabilities. And there was a celebration of the publication of a really remarkable book. That book is Our Voices, First Person Accounts of Schizophrenia. Now, the book was edited, or actually conceived, written, and edited by five extraordinary people. Their names are Colette Kaur, Michael Dunn, Manisha Kapil, Pickens Miller, and Claudia Moon, and they are all clients of the STEP program. Ah, here's Bebe. Welcome. Come have a seat. We have just gone on.
I was listening.
Bebe, I just said STEP means Schizophrenia Treatment Evaluation Program. Tell us first about you, about the program, and then we're going to talk a little bit about schizophrenia, the treatments,
okay.
And the...
Okay. Well, my name's Bebe Smith. I'm a clinical social worker, and I've been working at UNC in the Schizophrenia Treatment and Evaluation Program since 1995. The program actually started in 1993 with a group of healthcare professionals who primarily worked on the inpatient unit at UNC. They were psychiatrists, recreational therapists, occupational therapists, and nurses who wanted to improve treatment for people with schizophrenia particularly. So they started out with doing some specialized treatment on the inpatient unit. And then they wanted to start moving that into the outpatient setting. So they started seeing some people as outpatients. And the idea was that they had treated people inpatient, and then they would also follow them as outpatients. When I started in 1995, I was the first full-time employee in the outpatient clinic. We had about 54 patients when I started, and today we have about 240 people who are treated for their outpatient care in our clinic that's based at the hospital and sort of firmly based in the residency training program. We also have an early psychosis program called OASIS that treats young people at the very early stages of psychotic disorders, and they serve about 100 people now. And then we've got a brand new clinic here in Carmel Mall. That's the STEP Community Mental Health Clinic. And we're serving about 25 people there and hoping to grow.
Schizophrenia is a very serious illness. tell folks, it's really hard to know. I mean, we don't. And then schizoaffective disorder, what are these?
Well, I mean, I think that we think of these as being brain disorders. The thing about illnesses like schizophrenia is that they're very different in different individuals. So there's a wide range in severity. Some people can have a very severe form of a psychotic disorder that might be very disabling. Other people might have a relatively mild form and might be, working in the community and able to function just fine. We do know one thing that's particularly challenging about these illnesses is that they generally appear in late adolescence and early adulthood. So they have a real tendency to disrupt people's lives.
Right at a time when they're becoming socialized and learning how to make their way independently in the world.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Okay. So that can be just very difficult. It can also just sort of change people's life trajectories, you know, where they had certain goals and dreams and they might end up having to change those. And it's also a very unfortunate thing that the illness is very stigmatized, probably more so than any other mental illness. We can talk pretty easily about someone having depression and even about someone having bipolar disorder. But when we talk about schizophrenia or other disorders, people get frightened by that. And I think there's a lot of fear and, you know, how things are portrayed in the media.
Why is that? I mean, what is it about schizophrenia that makes it?
Well, I mean, I think because psychosis can be such a strange kind of experience for people when people have, you know, sort of truly lost touch with reality, although that time of acute psychosis is generally fairly limited for somebody who is treated for their schizophrenia. And I guess my sense is that, you know, so much of who we are as people or as ourselves are caught up with our minds. And so the idea that you may have not have control of your mind or that things have changed I think it just gets so much to who the self is that, people are afraid of it.
How common is schizophrenia in the population?
It is a common illness. About 1 in 100 people will develop schizophrenia.
Okay. How does that compare with some of the depressions and bipolar and things like that?
I never can remember all those statistics.
Yeah, well,
I'm not good with that. But I believe it's probably less common than depression and perhaps less common than bipolar, but I'm actually, don't quote me on that.
Okay. The new clinic right across the street, what is that? That's our listeners are in that area. And tell us about that and what you all are doing there.
Okay. Well, I guess the origins of that happened probably about a year ago. I think if people are familiar with what's been going on in the mental health field, we had had a trend towards privatization under mental health reform, and our local community, OPC Area Program, had moved...
That's
Orange Person Chatham area program, which is now Orange Person Chatham local management entity. They had moved somewhat cautiously and slowly with divesting services, so with turning their services over to private providers. And their strategy had been to try to keep the services intact. And so they had one main provider come in to provide services and to essentially take over the mental health clinics in the area. About a year ago, and they were probably in the area doing business for a little more than a year. My timeline may not be exactly right, but in February of last year, that company said they could no longer provide services in these counties because of it wasn't financially viable. So they were closing their clinics. So there was kind of a panic in the community, particularly in the mental health community, and people worried that they weren't going to be able to get services. Some of us at UNC wanted to do more. We thought, we have some, what we do in STEP is take care of people with severe mental illness, and we thought we can do more of that. And we were interested in becoming more active in the community and just spreading out what we were doing. But the university moved somewhat slowly, so it took us, several months to be in a position where we could find some funding to be able to expand services. And we were able to do that through a number of ways.
And the funding you found is, I mean, you were intimately involved with all of that.
I was, and I think that there was a few of us who had a very strong drive to try to do something that would make a difference. We went about things with a couple of different strategies and a couple of phases. The first was to try to increase what we could do clinically, and recognizing that we would need startup funds to do that. And we were able to, we acquired funding from the Mental Health Trust Fund through the state, through OPC, a local management entity, to expand our clinical services. And that initial funding allowed us to rent space in Carmel Mall. And we're actually sharing that space with our early psychosis program, OASIS. We were then able to get some additional funding from the state along those lines. I think we were successful in getting funding because there was such a dire situation in mental health. Then the third thing that we did, which was kind of a bigger and more lofty goal, we applied for funding from the Duke Foundation to create a Center of Excellence in Community Mental Health. And we did receive funding for that. That will continue to support some of our clinical programs, but in addition, we'll create some administrative positions with the primary goal of pulling together university resources to both be more involved with direct services to people with severe mental illnesses. Okay. And what that means is that, you know, we have all sorts of programs that train professionals to work in mental health. We have a psychology department in the graduate school. We have a school of social work. We have a school of medicine. We have a department of psychiatry. We have a pharmacy school. We have a public health school all at UNC. And one of the ideas behind the Center of Excellence is to try to build some collaborative relationships between the programs, the various programs that are interested in mental health. And we're actually already seeing some exciting things happen with that. The Center of Excellence is really only just getting up and running, but for the first time, we have nurse practitioner students working with us in our clinical program. We also have a pharmacy resident who is coming out to the clinic and working with us, and she can bring, you know, a very specific knowledge about medications. In our STEP Community Mental Health Clinic, we're not just treating schizophrenia and psychotic disorders, but we are trying to keep a focus on the more severe disorders, mental disorders, you know, particularly the ones that benefit from medication treatment from a more intensive involvement with psychiatry. Then, you know, not everyone would need that, but that's kind of our focus.
I've been in there. It's a nice space you all have up there now.
Thank you.
Do we know what causes schizophrenia? And is there a cure?
There is no cure, and we don't really know what causes it. It's one of those things where there are probably multiple causes. It's probably not just one thing. There is a pretty clear agreement and that there is something that goes wrong with both the neurotransmission in the brains and that there's some changes in brain structure. Some of the more current theories about what causes schizophrenia is that something goes wrong very early on in brain development, you know, maybe while someone's in utero, and and there's actually research at UNC that's, you know, looking at those kinds of things.
And that's
Dr. John Gilmore is doing that, okay. they're doing scans of infants of mothers with schizophrenia, but trying to understand more about very early brain development. So the idea is there's something that goes wrong very early on that doesn't show up or doesn't manifest till later. And if you think about the brain and the kind of amazing things that it goes through with development, that, you know, there are many, many changes that happen, and some very significant changes in brains that happen in a normal person as they go through adolescence and enter young adulthood.
Okay, but this is not the sort of thing where, you know, the mother is drinking during, you know, pregnancy or something like that. It's not something that we know there's a...
Well, it's not something, yeah... Though they do know that there's some things that increase risk. You know, one is that if sort of timing of a mother having the flu during her pregnancy. There's some issues around, and I'm very bad with remembering the very facts of this, but what time of year a baby is born, you know, so if it looks like that there are certain sort of seasonal things involved that might have to do with illnesses that people acquire. That kind of thing. I guess there's a lot of look at the genetics of it, but what they know is it's a very complex genetic picture. There's no sort of one simple way to explain it genetically, but a lot of research going on in that area as well. I think you had also asked if there was a cure for schizophrenia, and there is not a cure for it, but there are effective treatments for it. And some of the research that's gone on at UNC and working with people at the very early stages of these disorders is that we're somewhat hopeful that if you can treat the illness early and keep people in treatment, that perhaps the illness won't get as severe as it can.
But now, that's kind of a problem because one of the things I read in this book, I mentioned the book, Our Voices, First Person Accounts of Schizophrenia, is that people, it's not easily diagnosed. There is no, you know, blood test you can do for schizophrenia. Right. And often it goes undiagnosed and untreated for years before.
Yes.
So that complicates the picture.
It does complicate the picture a lot. And I think if we were really going to change how things were, one, we would increase awareness about what were the early signs of psychosis. What does psychosis look like? I mean, I can think back to when I was in college and a friend developed an acute psychosis, and none of us knew what it was. And, you know, we did attribute it to drugs at the time. That may have been played something of a role, but this was something different, you know, and this was something that we were all baffled by. And I can look back with hindsight now and go, he was having a first psychotic episode. But when I was a college student, I had no knowledge of that. And my peers didn't, and I think that even the counselors that worked at the university really didn't understand.
Yeah, has our understanding of this improved dramatically in recent years, or is it still?
I mean, I think there's been
clinical.
I think the clinical understanding certainly has expanded. I think the idea of sort of the general public sort of understanding what a psychotic disorder is still pretty low. You know, I think about that when I talk to people just that I run into in the community, and some very well-educated people, you know, people who are highly respected scholars and, you know, fancy institutions who really, you know, sort of look at it as, oh, the person just, if they would just get their act together or if they just, you know, buckle down and do their studies.
Failure or
right.
something.
Right.
So what if we're telling people this is what you need to look for, this is how, if something's going wrong, you, what do you do? I mean, what would they do? What would they look for?
I guess what you might see for someone who was at the early stages of a psychotic disorder, there might be sort of changes in sleep and in functioning, the person's not doing the things they used to be able to do. They might be saying unusual things and behaving unusually. I think those are the things that make it more clear that this is a psychotic disorder. But people, I'm trying to give sort of a good clinical example. They might become overly worried that they have some medical illness without any basis in fact. Sometimes people are hearing voices. I can think about one young woman I worked with who, my first contact with her family, she was in college in another state, and she was in jail because she had vandalized her dorm room, you know, by spray painting on the walls, and it was the kind of thing where it was like, was this a crime or was this someone who was somewhat, you know, out of control? And that was a very brutal way to kind of enter the mental health system. But it sounded like if there's sort of strange things going on with someone, you know, those are the kinds of things that.
But this is more than just pranks, because I can remember a prank we all, you know,
yes.
we decided to do a group mural.
Yes.
You know,
right? Yes. And I think in her case, it was more than just a prank. And I think that was pretty clear to a lot of people around her, but it took her a long time to actually get help.
Mm-hmm. So if, I mean, it's going to be families and friends who mm-hmm. are typically mm-hmm. notice mm-hmm. the changes first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And is there anything they can do? I mean, what do they do? Where would they go? And
I mean, I think that for somebody who starts developing psychosis, it's a very frightening time. And oftentimes people are very willing to get some help, but they don't know what to do. So I think that helping people just get connected to a mental health professional is really sort of a first point. I think the hard thing with, you know, because we have this stigma about a severe illness like schizophrenia, is that that's a little bit of a barrier for people, but it doesn't have to be. If we can make people understand that these are disorders like any other disorder of an organ in the body.
That would make that mm-hmm, makes a mm-hmm. big difference to think of it that
mm-hmm,
way.
Mm-hmm. Then. And in other countries, we've actually modeled the early psychosis program after programs that are international. There's some in Australia and in Canada and the United Kingdom. Those programs put a lot of effort into educating the general public, educating general practitioners in medical settings, educating clergy, all the places that someone might go to sort of
hence
say.
Hence the name, the outreach, word outreach in the name. Outreach, yeah. What is it, outreach?
Well, that is the name of OASIS is Outreach and Support Intervention Services. But that's an element of a truly comprehensive early psychosis program, is to raise awareness of psychosis. And to help people know that this is, to change that message, you know, to change that this is a treatable illness and that a good recovery is possible.
Well, that's encouraging that there is a good recovery
mm-hmm,
possibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, give folks the address or the contact information here if they have had, something they wanted, they thought
uh-huh.
something was wrong and they
uh-huh,
needed to get.
Uh-huh. The number for the STEP Community Mental Health Clinic is 942-7363. And we are located in Carmel Mall, actually in the old part of the mill where the shops are, but up on the second floor. So the mailing address is 200 North Greensboro Street, and we're in Suite C6, and that's right at the top of the stairs in Carmel Mall.
Yeah, it really is. When you walk mm-hmm. up those, mm-hmm. that out of that stairwell, mm-hmm. you just look to your right, and it's a very small sign.
Yes, it is a small sign.
And an unmarked door, but it's right there.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And we are operational out of there. We have two part-time psychiatrists working there. We've just hired a clinical social worker who's going to be taking on a primary role and getting people connected in that clinic. And we're offering community support services and psychotherapy services.
Support services,
mm-hmm.
what exactly?
Yes, community support is one of those that's been written about in the News and Observer quite a bit. It's a very broad category of a Medicaid service, but the way that we do it in STEP, we use master's level clinicians, usually social workers, and some graduate students, who the primary difference between therapy and community support is that therapy is offered in our offices. Community support, we actually bring the service to the community, into the people's homes, or wherever it is that they're comfortable in meeting. But it's kind of based on skill building, helping people sort of learn to manage their illness, and then helping them with the practical aspects of managing their lives. So if they need help with applying for disability benefits or Medicaid.
Okay. I was going to ask for examples.
Or if they need housing. We've actually got, I believe, we've got, of the 25 people we're serving currently in Carmel Mall, and we do hope that number is going to grow, I think we've got 3 people who are homeless. So that's, when the social workers get involved, that's kind of one of the first priorities is helping them find housing.
And you all have connections with a number of group homes or other facilities in the community, don't you? Like Club Nova?
Yes, we are. And actually, we can't do the work that we do without a network of collaborating agencies. We work very closely with Club Nova. Many of the folks we work with are members at Club Nova. And Club Nova provides just an amazing, really, they provide community to the people we work with, but lots of support in lots of different ways. And we work with Caramore, which is a psychosocial rehab, provides vocational services and independent living services, and then just a variety of other agencies in the community.
I want to get in a plug for this book, too, and how would people get a copy?
Okay. Well, we've had a group of clients who worked on a book project for several years, and that book has been published. It's called Our Voices, First Person Accounts of Schizophrenia. It's available at any online bookstore. It's published by a company called iUniverse. It's a self-publishing company, but I would encourage people to take a look at it.
Yeah, it's getting tremendous reception in the community. People have... And having read it, I was reading it and had it on the coffee table. My son picked it up and he goes, "Wow, Mom, this is amazing. I didn't know this," because it's a different way of talking about or looking at.
Right.
We have things. Just once more, Carmel Mall. You're located at Carmel Mall right here on 200 North Greensboro Street in Carborough. And the phone number is 942-7363. Get that right?
That's right.
And there's also the facilities at UNC. How are those?
Yes, those are still there. And the resident clinic, again, you know, we kind of provide the same services there. But my colleague Jenny Edwards heads that up, and she can be reached at 966-8033.
So you have been listening to your wake-up call. This is from the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Our guest today has been Bebe Smith. She is the Director of Outpatient Services for the Schizophrenia Treatment and Evaluation Program. And do you have a separate title now? You're also the co-director.
Yes, I am co-director of the Center of Excellence in Community Mental Health, along with John Gilmore is the director.
Okay. And Bebe, thank you very much. If any of you out there need more information about this, you can also visit the psychiatry website at www.psychiatry.unc.edu and click on the programs and centers, and you'll find the STEP program listed there. Thank you, and I think I've already mentioned we'll be talking about the President's Healthcare Reform Conference next week. Join us again, and thank you.
All right. Thank you, Tana.